Mark Maron. It's 6 past the hour here on Air America Radio, and this is Morning Sedition. Good morning. Oh, look at this. Geniuses, philosopher, king. Happy to you. Happy birthday to you.
Oh, my God.
Happy birthday, dear Pops Riley. Happy birthday to you.
Oh, thank you all
and
very
many
much.
More.
Thank you all very, very much. This is wonderful. Look at this cake.
It's a Morning Sedition birthday party for Mark Riley.
All right.
And you know what? That's something we could have faked, fellas, but you actually got a cake.
I actually got a cake with lit candles.
That's right. Unbelievable.
And see, if I eat this, I'm going to curl up in the corner of the studio. That's going to be it for the rest of the show.
Don't think I didn't see you have the special cinnamon bun earlier. That's like the Mark Riley, I figure I'll treat myself birthday cinnamon bun before the show.
Let me tell you something. I got treated all right this morning. I was in absolute shock before. This is the first time I've ever gotten birthday gifts at like 3 o'clock in the morning.
Tell the people what you got, Mark.
My daughter spread these little things on the floor and led me to an iPod Nano.
You got to blow the candles out, Riley, and make a wish.
Yeah, we don't know if the fire alarm's going to go off in here. We might get kicked out of the studio.
All right, here we go. One, two. I don't know if I got the breath for this.
You
here
did.
We go.
Yes.
Whoa.
All right.
I
still got it.
That was great.
So
it's 54 today?
54 today.
You made it this far. Good deal. Pops
yeah.
Riley.
Thank you very much,
and now
folks.
Let's continue the story about Vivica, your daughter, left you a little trail. That was very nice, fellas. Thanks for the...
Yeah, that was great.
That was a very exciting way to start the day. Now I'm going to be thinking about cake for the next 3 hours. I'm going to be sitting here going, that cake's just sitting out
you
there.
You and me both, pal.
So what happened now? Vivica left you a trail?
She left me notes on the floor saying, Daddy, follow this trail.
Uh-huh.
And she started little bits of paper around the house, and I went to the first one, which was in the kitchen. I opened that up, and it was like this connector port,
uh-huh.
The USB port.
Right? Okay.
I'm looking at this thing.
What is this to?
Next thing I know, I go into our little other room where she led me, and there was an iPod Nano.
Oh, you're in it now,
Riley. I'm in the 21st century. It's scaring the bejesus out.
Oh, my God. Your wife's going to have to be with you at all times now just so you can operate the thing.
I can put the thing on the tip of my tongue. It's an incredible machine, this little iPod.
You can put it in your mouth?
Look, the New York Times did a review of this thing last week, and the picture that went with the review was a guy with his tongue stuck out and the iPod Nano on the end of it.
So you can just insert it in your mouth and you can hear the songs in your head?
Maybe, I don't know.
I don't know if it's soundproof.
Oh,
I'm sorry. I don't know if it's waterproof.
Well, yeah.
He's making me jealous. I'm like, wow, you mean I could just sit on there and suck on this iPod and hear it? I don't have to wear the headphones? That's interesting. Now no one will know how to steal it if you can stick the whole thing in your mouth.
But you know what? That wasn't the only gift.
Oh.
I opened the first two. Then my wife and daughter woke up and said, no, we're not finished.
Uh-huh.
They took me down to the basement. I opened my eyes because my daughter made me close them, and I look and I see there's this gigantic massage chair.
Oh my God!
Basement.
Riley never has to walk again.
That's right.
You come here to work, you sit down, then you just go home. The only time and then you get in your car and you sit down, then you drive to where you're going to sit at home.
But you know, this wasn't the final clincher.
Uh-oh.
Embedded in this chair was an iPod docking station and speakers.
So for when you take it out of your mouth?
Yeah. I can put it right down on top of this couch, stick a little thing in it that's built into the couch,
uh-huh.
and I can hear music through the speakers while I'm having my back massage.
Oh, my
that's
God.
A great
Riley.
It is a fabulous birthday. Thank you, Kim. Thank you, Vivica.
It sounds like Kim just made herself obsolete. am I wrong? Kim's just going to be limited to bringing you beverages.
Well, you know what? She was tired of rubbing my back off. So that was how it was done. But thank you all very, very much. It's been a great birthday. And it's, what, 10 minutes after 6 on the East Coast?
What do
I got to look forward to?
This is just the beginning, Riley. Oh there's going to be dancers and strippers every hour.
Strippers, Don Rumsfeld, Dick Cheney, are they all coming to wish me a happy birthday?
You really secretly wish that the neocons would come and wish you a happy birthday. Yeah, but this is our big excuse to bring a stripper on the air. I'm kidding.
Okay.
I'm kidding.
Okay.
No. There's people sitting out there going, that's it. I've had it with this. This is not progressive.
You know, you never know what our audience likes and doesn't like. Because later on, I think we're going to talk about an email that you got.
Oh, yeah.
Well,
that's funny.
Yeah, I know. We got to talk about this.
We can open with this one. There's a couple emails today that I thought were pretty good. And this one's pretty pertinent because we're going to start talking a little bit about what's going on with Hurricane Rita, which is now a Category 5 storm. very frightening for many people all in the Gulf Coast. But this is a good way to lead into it. I got an email today from a guy named Charlie. And he says, I've heard a great many Christian evangelists talking about why Katrina devastated New Orleans. Licentiousness, drunkenness, drug use, single parents, etc. I know that the very Reverend Pat Robertson has previously used hurricanes as a sign of God's wrath, a retribution for the moral turpitude of somebody somewhere. Well, I was struck this evening by a curious coincidence. An overlay of the predicted storm track of Rita on a Google Earth view of Texas shows that God's aim is improving. It looks like hurricane force winds will pass right over our dear leader's home in Crawford. It looks like this is going to be another catastrophic hit on the American populace, and I grieve for the coming tragedy to our fellow Americans. However, maybe that is really a way to let us all know that God is talking to Mr. Bush, and that maybe God has decided that she's not happy with Mr. Bush's compassionate conservatism. That's a great letter. It's a great observation. I've been saying that that the hurricane is proof that God doesn't like George Bush, but Charlie here, a fan who sent this email, made the connection.
Put some meat to them bones.
Exactly. That's exactly what he did. My chair just went down. See, I'm trying the new sit-down thing, and I don't know how to operate my chair.
Neither does anyone else on the
floor.
Hey,
you can't bring your massage chair to work. I'm not going to have that. I'm not going to sit here and watch Riley.
Pickup truck.
Just sort of like. All right. Well, let's. I guess we got to get into a bit of bad news here on your birthday, Riley. But yeah. Let's do it. Rita is now being called the third worst storm ever in the history of recorded storms. It is expected to make landfall on Saturday in Texas, but it could hit anywhere from southwest Louisiana to northeast Mexico. And I'll tell you, the federal government is not holding any punches on this one. That's for sure, Riley.
No.
Apparently, the National Guard. The amount of National Guard's presence at this point in time, Pentagon officials have made 319,000 National Guard troops available to respond to Rita, 1,100 from Texas who were actually in New Orleans and responding in different places to Katrina. Have been relocated back to Texas, and several Navy amphibious assault ships were deployed off the shore to help out. And you've got some news there on the oil refinery shutting down along the Gulf Coast, which is going to shoot gas prices right up the roof.
It's going to shoot gas prices right up the roof. And I don't know, Mark, it's kind of early in the morning to talk about the political ramifications of a storm that hasn't hit land yet. But there are already ramifications. The Dow, for those of you who follow the stock market, the Dow went down 100 points yesterday. You know why? Because those same refineries are closing down, and speculators are now deathly afraid that the cost of gasoline and, of course, home heating oil as we get into the fall will skyrocket as a result of this. Now, they've dropped a little bit over the last couple of weeks in the wake of Katrina.
Right.
Because they skyrocketed when Katrina first hit. That is one of the issues here. But the secondary issue, and you watch how this is being done, because remember that Karl Rove has got his pudgy fingers in the middle of all this. Bush is going to use this storm, Rita, to try and restore his reputation.
Yeah, well, he's not off to a good start, I'll tell you right now. He's already trying to actually connect the hurricane and terrorists. He's not making a direct connection, but in a speech yesterday, he said, quote, the terrorists look at the storm and wish they had caused it, end quote. That is essentially connecting the storm and terrorists, that he is now going to try and get a little momentum out of what most people know him to be, which is a guy who says he's doing things about terrorism outside of the fact that he's only creating more terrorism, but he likes to connect things to terrorists, and now he's actually going to try to connect the hurricane to terrorism. Is that part of the big plan?
Well, see, here's the interesting thing about what George Bush did. Who's the only other person that connected the hurricane to terror?
Terrorists.
Zarqawi.
Exactly.
All right? So now George Bush is in a spitting match with Zarqawi, who said, Katrina was, we hope it destroys everything, whatever he said. And here comes George Bush, more or less answering Zarqawi in a very indirect way.
Yeah, but Zarqawi is actually saying he's taking responsibility for the storm. And apparently Bush is like, he's just saying that they wished it. But if you ask Zarqawi, he's like, oh, no, our prayers have been answered. We definitely. So if this is going to become a mystical battle, a spiritual battle, or whatever you want to call it a Christo-fascist zombie brigade battle, is that, you know, Pat Robertson is going to have a hard time, as our emailer said, Charlie, putting the spin on this thing.
Yeah.
What I think is interesting is Houston's mayor. Now, you know, obviously, I don't want to be too glib about what's going on and what might happen on Saturday. I mean, a lot of people have been displaced. Many people have been displaced twice. I mean, evacuations, man, more than 1.3 million people in Texas and Louisiana were actually sent packing on orders from authorities who learned a bitter lesson from Katrina. 20,000 more along the Louisiana coast were evacuated. Special attention was given to hospitals and nursing homes because of the horrendous stories we heard out of New Orleans about people being abandoned, people life support systems going down. Helicopters, ambulances, and buses were used to evacuate 200 patients from Galveston's only hospital. Galveston actually is a city of 58,000, and it's on a coastal island 8 feet above sea water. And it was actually, as we said yesterday, the victim of the deadliest natural disaster in U.S. history, unnamed hurricane in 1900, killed between 6,000 and 12,000 people there. And some people say that that city hasn't even recovered from that yet, that it changed the history of that city forever. Now, here's where it gets interesting. Houston's mayor said there were not enough government vehicles to evacuate everybody from the city's vulnerable areas and asked the public to help out. Houston, this is Bush's old hometown. Now, I'm waiting for those parking lots full of school bus pictures. Where are those now from Houston? This is Houston. This is the president's backyard. That city is not even equipped. Who's he going to blame for this?
No one was equipped. Ray Nagin, for all people have said about him, was not equipped, although now he says that he's got about 500 buses ready to evacuate. But let me tell you something about that whole bus thing, since you brought that up. Do you know how many buses, school buses, there are in the entire city of New Orleans? About 300 some odd. Do you know what some conservative commentators have been saying about how many buses Ray Nagin was supposed to have had at his disposal in the wake of Katrina? 2,000 buses.
300 school buses at 60 a pop is not going to help out to anybody in terms of, it's only going to help out a very small percentage of the people that need help. When you're talking about 1.3 million people, obviously people are going to have to get in their cars. Obviously people are going to have to help out and do whatever they can to help their brothers and sisters and their neighbors out in getting out of that town. But it's just that, you know, you cannot start accusing local authorities in a situation like this, especially when you're talking about the president's backyard. They are ill-equipped. And it's obviously that there is still not an effective plan in place for this region that is vulnerable to these hurricanes. I mean, it's pretty clear where these things hit, isn't it, Riley?
Well, you never know exactly where they're going to hit. But the amazing thing, Mark, is that you're looking now at the very real possibility that New Orleans will flood a second time, even if it doesn't hit it.
Well, let's hold that thought and get into that speculation in just a second. It's Mark Riley's birthday. You're listening to Air America Radio's Morning Seditions, 18 past the hour.
Hi, this is Mike Mills from REM, and you are listening to Mark and Mark on Morning Sedition here on Air America Radio.
Three past the hour. It's Mark Maron here with Mark Riley,
Hi. The
birthday boy.
Hi.
Pops Riley, birthday, 54 today. You're listening to Air America Radio. He's already into the cake. That was a great idea, fellas, to bring chocolate cake with sugar in it for my aspiring diabetic friend here.
Who?
Man, get Riley around sugar. It's like, here we go.
Yeah.
All right, so look, let me do a little business here. We'll be broadcasting live from Washington, D.C. tomorrow, so make sure to tune in. We're going to have Cindy Sheehan. I'm going to be interested to talk to her because I think she's been getting into some trouble lately. I got dispatches from the margin that she might have been beat up in New York. I got dispatches from the margin yesterday that's saying that her bus was pulled over by the Capitol Police yesterday. I'm looking.
What?
Well, she's been on this tour, and I hear she's getting a little flack. You know, somebody stole everything from that shrine in Crawford, Texas, just made it all disappear. There's nothing there anymore. I'm going to be excited to talk to her. I'm glad she's okay because I've been hearing rumors that, you know, it hasn't been easy for her on this on this tour she's been on.
Yeah, I've been hearing those same things, in fact.
Yeah. We're also going to have our old friend Peter Bergen, the terrorist expert, one of the only Western journalists who ever interviewed Osama bin Laden. And you're going to want to hear, of course, Lawton Smalls from Planet Bush, actually on Planet Bush in Washington. So he's going to be piping in with his two cents. Later in the show today, we'll have a special giveaway for our Boston listeners. Tickets to Jimmy Tingle's American Dream, starring comedian Jimmy Tingle,
yeah,
who will join us by phone later this morning. His one-man show is playing at Jimmy Tingle's Off-Broadway Theater in Davis Square, Somerville, Massachusetts. You can get tickets at jimmytingle.com. Also, Air America Radio is sponsoring a special panel discussion entitled Katrina's Wake, Our Government and the Common Good. It's next Tuesday night here in Manhattan. You can go to airamericaradio.com for details. Rachel Maddow is going to be there. Christina Van Heuvel.
Is that Vandenhoevel.
Vandenhoevel.
Yeah. I got a question for you.
Okay. where's this going
to
go?
First of all, let me just say, Jimmy Tingle's a very funny guy.
Yeah.
But beyond that, you know, Peter Bergen, when we talk to him, I wonder, since he's talked to some of these terrorists, some of these insurgents, I wonder if he can tell us whether they really believe a lot of the stuff about the hurricane being some kind of retribution. You know what I'm saying?
Well, hey, Riley, there's a lot of people in this country who believe George Bush is a good president.
I know.
So, you know, delusional thinking, no matter what race of person it may be, is certainly
rampant.
That's a good way to put it. So let's get back into the sadness here. Katrina's death total passed the 1,000 mark. It's at 1,036 in the five Gulf Coast states, 799 in Louisiana alone. Now, here's a very frightening thing. Here's a frightening thing for the country. It's frightening for people who live in Louisiana. The Army Corps of Engineers says New Orleans, the levees there, can only handle up to 6 inches of rain and a storm surge of 10 to 12 feet. Mayor Ray Nagin estimated right now that there's still about 400 to 500 people who are still in part of the New Orleans, the vulnerable East Bank areas of the city, and they might have to drag those people out at gunpoint if they can't do what's best for them and get out of there. Hopefully, these levees don't break again, Riley, because that would be just a horrendous event.
It would be, a real body blow to the city of New Orleans.
Another one.
After the one that they've already had, a storm surge that would have the effect not just of destroying what little may be left, but also muddying the waters, I hate to use that term, in terms of oil, in terms of a lot of this toxic gumbo we've been hearing so much about. What is going to be the impact of another surge of water dispersing that stuff, even further out than it is now?
Absolutely. Again, if people are just checking in and don't know, Rita is now at Category 5. That's up around 175 mile per hour winds. It's off the coast now. It's not supposed to hit landfall until Saturday, and we're hoping for the best. People on CNN are trying to spin it. I already saw it. They're like, well, if it's just rain in New Orleans, that could be good
because
it'll wash away some of the filth. Well, look, here, we're going to talk about Iraq, about our president's spinning of Iraq, and about someone he's starting to sound a lot like who was also in crisis, and that's LBJ when Vietnam got really ugly. 27 past the hour, morning sedition.
Morning Sedition with Mark Maron and Mark Riley on Air America Radio.
Thirty-four past the hour. It's Mark Maron with Mark Riley.
Hi.
It's Air America Radio's Morning Sedition. It's Thursday, September 22nd, and the reason that day is important is it's Mark Riley's birthday.
Yes, it is.
Yay! Do I have a yes? You've made it, Riley. You've made it another year. Good for you.
Yes, and with my new massage chair, I'll make it for another year.
Yeah, his family got tired of him going into Brookstone at the mall and, sitting in there for 3 hours in the massage chair. They figured they'd get him one. That's great. I didn't know anyone bought those.
I'm glad. You know what? They got it. It wasn't Brookstone. It was Sharper Image.
Oh, okay. Much better. Yeah. I've always seen those things, and I've sat in them a couple times myself. And there's that moment where you're like, wow, this does feel pretty good, it'd be weird to have it in my house. And now you're going to have one.
I sat in it for like 5 minutes before I left to come in here. I'm a new man.
And you got your iPod Nano. You're in the future. You never have to leave the house just to drive somewhere else to sit down. It's nice. Sometimes when you read the headlines, it can be tough to figure out just exactly what the mainstream media is saying. So luckily, we have an iNews 5000 Wi-Fi headline translator. Let's crank this baby up and feed it some headlines. From the San Francisco Chronicle, Bush Bush administration highlights Rita readiness. Bush administration highlights Rita readiness. Translation. President able to help president's home state. From the Washington Post. Survey, environment, a lower voter priority. Survey, environment, a lower voter priority. Translation, lack of oxygen damages voter judgment. There you go. From the ABC News, from ABC News, not the ABC News. That's not proper grammar, is it? Like, I know what proper grammar is. Condoms are named...
Proper grammar is condoms.
Condoms are named for Clinton and Lewinsky. Where's this going? Boy, it could go a lot of places, couldn't it? Condoms are named for Clinton and Lewinsky. I'm going to save that one for last, but let's do, how about this one? Most effective birth control since Linda Tripp mask. Oh. But you know what? I've got more. Condoms are named for Clinton and Lewinsky. do I do it? New condom brands, Bubba and Chubba. But it could, all right. I felt bad about it, you know, because I didn't feel that bad, but I don't like to make fun of people's weight, really.
You shouldn't feel bad, man.
Because I got to be honest with you, I always found Monica Lewinsky kind of appealing.
Yeah,
I don't.
She was a good chubba.
Yeah, not a chubba.
A good chubba.
You know, dude, I'll be honest with you. I was at, where was I? I was at a restaurant in Los Angeles. What the hell is the name of that place? I'll try and remember the name of that place. And she was sitting in there eating. And
Of course she was.
Well, that's the sad thing, man. I sat there and watched Monica Lewinsky eat her dinner. I wasn't like stalking her. I was waiting for food. But then I watched her eat her dessert.
Uh-oh.
And she ordered like this mound of bread pudding, my friends. I mean, you know, it's not just a piece of cake. It's like the most fattening thing on the menu. And she looked at me and I looked at her and we had that knowing look of like, you know, yeah, I know you can't help yourself. And, and you gotta eat. And I it's okay. I still thought she was cute. So let's move into this. This is interesting because Bush has appointed somebody, to do the investigation into himself. Now, you truth seekers are going to be very excited about who he made the appointment because he's going to get right to the bottom of this thing. George Bush has appointed Homeland Security Advisor Fran Townsend to lead an internal inquiry into the federal response to Hurricane Katrina. What is Townsend's current job? Combating terrorism, my friend. So maybe this is going to tie in with Bush's new theory. Maybe they're going to get to the bottom of this because, you know, Bush yesterday said the terrorists look at the storm and wish they had caused it. Well, maybe Fran Townsend is going to find out that actually the terrorists did cause Katrina. Now, heading up the Katrina inquiry is not only outside of her expertise, it distracts her from what she's supposed to be doing, Riley. I mean, Townsend, she previously worked at the National Security Council. She's been involved personally in inspecting security arrangements at the Athens Olympics. She is somebody who is doing another job, but that doesn't matter to this president. And go ahead.
Well, see, what is amazing about this is that the president has finally, I guess, decided that Osama bin Laden really isn't worth tracking down. Michael Scheuer, the CIA, former CIA operative who we spoke to on the air, the guy who wrote the book Imperial Hubris under the name Anonymous.
Formerly known as Anonymous.
Yes. He says that if there was anyone in the Bush camp, and I don't know whether this woman was actually born in the Bush camp, but if there's anyone in that camp that is capable of continuing the hunt for Osama bin Laden on an intelligence level, it is the same Fran Townsend.
And, you know, Michael Schur is a CIA insider. He's a guy that knows the score, and he was, you know, and he's not somebody who would just say things. He doesn't have a chip on his shoulder. He's a Republican. He voted for George Bush. He's got nothing to gain from saying this. And basically what that means is that Bush just appointed the person who should be in charge of hunting down bin Laden to investigate why the government failed to respond to Katrina fast enough. How ridiculous is that? I mean, the bottom line is that it's so hard for me to tell usually, Riley, is it incompetence or is it decided upon? I mean, we all know that the bin Laden search is a joke.
Yeah, it is.
And I've always believed that they want to keep him out there because if God forbid, the Americans that still believe in this presidency see that bin Laden's been caught or killed or put into prison, they might start to lose faith in this president's BS.
You know what's fascinating about this? It appears as though though Bush has fast-tracked Fran Townsend. I mean, this woman, going back a decade, worked for Janet Reno, was one of Janet, was slammed by conservatives for being one of Janet Reno's inner circle. And then she went to the NSC. Then he very publicly named her his, you know, personal homeland security advisor, which really gave her a great deal of gravitas. When, you know, when Fran Townsend talked down there, people began, you know, people were really listening. She had a lot of power. She probably had more power than Richard Clark did when he was the counterterrorism czar. And then suddenly, abruptly, he moves her off of this and into, you know, an investigation into Katrina when you got another hurricane bearing down on, you know, on a populated area of the country.
Well, as I've always said, God is probably the most dangerous terrorist of all. So they're going to track this guy down and figure out how to find him. If they do, I need to know. And what I want to clarify what I said before is that I believe that bin Laden is left to remain outside of the law, specifically because if they do catch somebody like bin Laden on a metaphoric level, on a symbolic level, despite what power he might have at this point in time, it might give some people some closure on some of this war on terror. And I think that in order to keep that an engaging and frightening thing to many people, in order to control them, that he is left to remain outside of the law intentionally. I believe that is a secret policy. Now, right now, in terms of Iraq, I want to discuss a little bit how the neocon death cult may not want to admit it, but they will do anything to avoid comparing this war, the Iraq war, to Vietnam. But if you listen, if you start to listen to what George Bush is saying in his speeches, it's starting to sound a lot like LBJ did when he talked about the Vietnam War at the point where that thing was starting to come off the hinge, you know, just coming unglued and chaos was reigning. Like in LBJ, and this is in 1967, this was a pivotal year for the U.S. in Nam, and it was getting bad. Quote, America is committed to the defense of South Vietnam until an honorable peace can be negotiated. We shall stay the course. That's LBJ, 1967. Now, after 14 Marines died in a roadside bombing on August 3rd, Bush stated, quote, we will stay the course. We will complete the job in Iraq, and the job is we'll help the Iraqis develop democracy, end quote. Now, I didn't live through Vietnam, so I had to, read a couple articles and understand where this was coming from. But, apparently South Vietnam was completely unstable, and they tried to have elections, they tried to adopt a constitution in the midst of all this chaos and corruption, and that sounds familiar to me, Riley.
Well, you know, the problem in Vietnam in the 60s was simply this. The French had pulled out, remember they used to control Indochina. The North had come under communist, control. And people were afraid that the North, you know, if the South was left to its own devices, would be overrun, which is eventually what ended up happening anyway. But LBJ used a lot of the same rationale, encouraging freedom, justified to protect the country. Now, remember that North Vietnam posed no immediate threat to the United States any more than Saddam Hussein did.
Yeah, well, dig this. This is real telling. I mean, almost to the point where you wouldn't think that Bush's speechwriters would use LBJ as a resource. You know, I wouldn't think it. So I just have to think that this is the way propaganda works. These are symbolic statements. These are symbolic analogies that are, you know, just part of the American lexicon. In 67, LBJ said, quote, Our nation, meaning America, was not born easily. There were times in those years of the 18th century when it seemed as if we might not be born at all. Given that background, we ought not be astonished that this struggle in Vietnam continues, end quote. Bush said in a radio address August 27th, quote, like our own nation's founders over two centuries ago, the Iraqis are grappling with difficult issues, such as the role of the federal government. What is important is that Iraqis are now addressing these issues through debate and discussion, end quote. Now, you know how Vietnam ended. Vietnam ended with a glum and a defeated withdrawal of the American troops.
It was ugly. It was really ugly. And both Bush and Lyndon Johnson are facing the same problem. They are both facing that. Well, in Johnson's case, he faced a long war, and Bush is facing a long war that in neither case, people thought could be won.
But this idea that democracy, that the democracy that you're trying to establish in either of those places is similar to what happened in this country is a complete bit of misinformation. The situation
true.
It's completely different. I mean, you know, the people that developed our country came from another country. They left another country. Someone didn't come into England and at gunpoint tell them to make a government.
No, that happened, I guess, some centuries earlier, I guess.
So here we go. This is what's happening in terms of whether or not the U.S. is, the people of this country are actually believing Bush's line of crap. Public approval of Bush's overall handling of the situation in Iraq. 32% approve, 67% disapprove at this point in time. That is down from 40% from 1 week ago, my friends. That's a week ago, 8 percentage points. Exactly 40% of Americans had approved of Bush's handling of Iraq in each of the previous four measures dating back to May. For the first time since the start of the Iraq war in 2003, two-thirds of Americans disapprove of the job he is doing in Iraq. This is from a CNN USA Today Gallup poll conducted September 16th through the 18th. Here's another bit of information. Did the U.S. make a mistake in sending troops to Iraq? 59% say yes, and that's a new high. 59%. U.S. forces in Iraq. I mean, this is the one that really blows me away in terms of how many people want them to withdraw the U.S. forces. And there's a couple other numbers on here. Let's get into those in a minute. It's 46 past the hour. It's Air America Radio's Morning Sedition.
MorningSedition.com. Our guests, our comedy, your blog. MorningSedition.com. Air America Radio.
Fifty past the hour. It's Mark Maron here with Mark Riley.
Hi.
On Mark Riley's birthday, it's Air America Radio's Morning Sedition program. Let me finish up giving these poll numbers to you. The percentage of people in a CNN USA Today Gallup poll. This was conducted last week, I guess, September 16th and 18th. Is that last week or is that a few days ago?
That's a couple days ago.
How do you like that?
The 18th was last weekend.
I got to get my calendar together in my head. Here we go. U.S. forces in Iraq, the 63% say withdraw some or all. And that is a new high. I mean, people are not buying it. Now, you know, Bush trying to connect the hurricane with terrorists. Unbelievable, the amount of stupidity he imagines some of the United States, people of the United States are willing to take. I got to tell you, there's very little reason that anyone could have for supporting this president. And I just got to assume that if you still blindly support this president, you've really got to be mentally retarded, or at least compromised somehow, challenged. And I know retarded is a rough word, but how, I mean, you've got to be stupid. And the way people spin this stuff, Riley, the way people say things like the Democrats are trying to blame Bush for the weather. I don't know what it is when you hear somebody spew a talking point out of their dumb mouths that came out of the mouth of one of the other paid dummies like Hannity or Rush or O'Reilly. I just don't know where they get off in being able to say those things completely unsupported, like they're smart, like they've won an argument. It's this weird sports type mentality when it comes to arguing about politics. They don't care about other people. They don't care about policies hurting people. All they care about is being smug, condescending, and you know, feeling like they won an argument on a stupid, faulty talking point that was delivered into their head by somebody who has them hypnotized.
Well, that's the amazing thing about that is the notion that so much of this information is false, just like it was with those school buses. Ray Nagin didn't have 2,000 school buses, but it didn't matter. You had commentators saying 1,000 buses, 2,000 buses. And what's amazing about the numbers that you just read, Mark, is that for a long time there were people who disapproved of the war but did not want to withdraw the troops. You know, so there was that kind of split. You'd have a majority who say, yeah, I disapprove of Bush's handling of Iraq, but the troops have to stay for whatever reasons people had. Now that part is starting to change. The people that were saying keep the troops there are now saying get them out or at least start a staged withdrawal.
Absolutely. Here we go. Now, we get email all the time. If you want to email us, you can email us at sedition@airamericaradio.com. And, I go through it occasionally, sometimes more than others. But I'll tell you, there's a couple of good ones yesterday. This one I wanted to just reach out in gratitude. I mentioned my cats had fleas, Monkey and Fonda and Hissy. Uh-oh. They all had, I don't know how they got them. I'm 2-3 floors up. I don't know how the fleas got in there, but I got a flea comb. I found some fleas. I squished them in my fingers, so I knew I had to do something. And I got this lovely letter from this woman. She says, love ya. Love all the honesty in this crazy automaton corporate twisted world. Real is so refreshing. And love kitties too.
Uh-oh.
All right. I'm into natural stuff for the cats, and you can use brewer's yeast. That's the kind that people take, but buy it at the health food store and put it just a touch of in the cat's food, probably an eighth teaspoon for less. Cats are delicate. The other flea repellent is garlic, but when I gave Sassafras raw garlic last year, that made her sick. Some cats can't take raw garlic. Now I give her a pinch of, what is that, colic garlic, and I open a capsule and mix some in with her food once a day. Now, you know, I got to be honest with you, Helena. That's the woman's name who sent me this. Yeah, I care about my cats, and I have an inner hippie, and I understand that this is all good. But I don't have my cats are wild, and they eat one thing. And I got this thing in my brain where it's like I've done enough for them. The fact that they don't live in the garbage anymore is a good thing. Every day out of the garbage that they're in my house, I believe is a good thing. I feed them one thing, and I really was thinking about this because I have a health food store. The Sai Baba people, famed pedophile and cult leader, has operatives around the corner that sell me pomegranate juice. But here's the deal. I was going to go do this, but I don't know. I can't get involved, and I feel a little bit bad about it. But here she goes on, and this is even tweaked me even more. She says, Sassy almost died because of fleas. She was getting bitten very bad. I didn't know how serious it was. I didn't want to use Advantage and other strong stuff. She turned around after I called the natural vet / anthropologist / crazy man / author in Utah, and he sold me an herbal formula. I changed her diet to raw chicken, and my friends Kia and Sean did healing on her. And one night when I came home, she came to the door to greet me like she used to do and has been better ever since. Now, if Sean and Kia want to come to my house and do a healing on my cat, I might be open to it, but I got to be honest, I went for the chemicals. I went out and I got Advantage, which is a high-priced, a flea repellent that lasts a month, and I did it, and I don't feel bad about it, but I really appreciate your advice, Helena. I would have taken it had I had more time and friends that can do healing.
Wait a minute now. What? Is brewer's yeast considered hippie food now or something?
But any vitamin supplement on some level is considered hippie food, but brewer's yeast, no.
I took brewer's yeast as a kid.
Okay, well, let's call it the folk remedy then. How about that?
It wasn't considered remedy. It was like it was something that supposedly built up my immune system. My father has been taking it since rest his soul, but he was taking it back in the 20s.
the natural place for me to go is probably the wrong place. But I understand. I've taken it myself sometimes, and I used to mix a food for my other cat, Butch, who I had a complete obsession with, as you know, and that was a much healthier cat. But as I said, these are garbage cats that I've done a favor for and love very much. But quickly, another email. Okay, I podcast your show every day and listen to it religiously. It is easily my favorite radio show ever. However, if I hear the Spin Doctors again as lead-in music or as any kind of music, unless you're reporting a story about the actual band, I may be forced to never listen again. That is all. Otherwise, keep up the good work. Chris in Bourbon, Indiana.
What Spin Doctors did we play?
I know we played one, but I don't even think the person that made the decision to use that song is around anymore. And I don't know why we played. Can we hear it? What is it, Chris? Oh, this is horrendous. Did we get rid of it?
Yeah.
It's dead.
I'm glad that the sound effect linked up. You know, for a second there, it became the unkillable Spin Doctor song.
That was a tough one. You really had to fight it.
Yeah.
You had to get in there and.
Hey, that song didn't get to number one for nothing.
You got to wrench it out of your consciousness. Well, there you go, Chris. It's gone. It's over. Look, we'll be back. We've got the Cliff Notes coming up. We're gonna be talking to Maxine Waters later. It's going to be a big show, 57 past the hour. Six past the hour. Good morning. It's Mark Maron here with Mark Riley.
Hi.
Air America Radio's Morning Sedition program, September 22nd, 2005. Mark Riley's birthday today, Thursday.
Yes.
Marks that event. 54 years old for Pops Riley. We were talking about his dad beyond the break and before about brewer's yeast. And in my ignorance, you know, I'm sitting here trivializing it, but your old man lived to be 86 years old?
87.
87 years old. That's tremendous.
And that was with a daily dose of Rouge. And I really developed a taste for it with orange juice. It was amazing.
That, I mean, that's got to help then. Now I'm going to go embrace the inner hippie, which is not an inner hippie. Apparently, Brewer's yeast has been known to be good. I took it for a while, but I never know what the hell it is. You know, my father's got me on these things now. My father's involved in some pyramid scheme where he's selling vitamin supplements, and now I'm taking something called the adaptogens, and I wasn't going to do it.
But adaptogens?
They're adaptogens. You should hear the sales pitch my old man's got. I wouldn't let him do it on the air because I don't want to give the company any publicity. But, man, he said, like, these are Russian herbs that live in Siberia, and just the fact that they were able to exist there, they take the stuff out of them that let them exist in the Siberia, and you put it in your body, and it bolsters your immune system.
Oh, wow. Okay.
It's quite a pitch. I don't know if it's true or not, but I just started doing it just so he'd get off my back. I can't tell you. My dad's a retired doctor, so now he's involved in this, like, Amway-like pyramid thing with these supplements.
Yeah.
And I'm like, I'm not going to do it. And he keeps going. He's like, look, I'm a doctor, and I'm also your father. So listen to
me
on this. Take this stuff. We had him on the air last week briefly, but I didn't even want to indulge him because I don't know about that company. I don't know what the hell I'm putting in my body, but I'm taking it. You know what those things, Riley? The thing I don't care. Back in the day, if I took drugs that were meant to do something, I felt them, right?
You knew exactly what they were doing.
Right. With supplements and with vitamins and stuff, I don't know if I'm getting any effect on it. And you're sitting there going, maybe I do feel better. I don't know. Do you ever get that?
Yeah, I do. And see, when I was a kid, you know, I got fed every remedy there was. Cod liver oil and brewer's yeast and all these different things. And, you know, I feel pretty good for 54 years old, so I figure all that stuff in the beginning was okay.
We got somebody on the phone here. Can we put him through? Hello? Yeah,
first of all, when you were a kid...
Al Sharpton.
Oh, wait a minute. How you doing, your reverendness?
Good boy. Happy birthday, Mark.
Thank you very much, Rev.
I want everybody to know when you were a kid, God was just saying, let's make liver. Let's make cod liver oil.
You know, you're not that much younger than me yourself, are you?
I didn't hear you.
Yeah, I know. How much younger than 54 are you, sir?
You're much younger. You're
much younger, okay.
When I was growing up all my way to kindergarten, I was listening to Mark Riley on the radio.
Now, I must say, in fairness, I do remember back in the day when I first started in radio, hearing about a certain boy preacher out in Brownsville who was, had ties to the late Adam Clayton Powell and was making a lot of noise out there. Was that you?
And the operative word is boy. You were grown.
Rev, thanks a lot for calling in, man.
Happy birthday, Mark. We love you.
All right, man. Thanks a lot.
Oh, that was great.
Yeah, the Reverend Al Sharpton. All right.
So tomorrow we'll be broadcasting live from Washington, D.C., so make sure to tune in. We'll have Cindy Sheehan with us. I'm curious to talk to Cindy because I've gotten reports from the margins of the ether that she's been going through some hard times in terms of the way she's been treated by the police, by the Capitol Police, by the New York Police, by counter-protesters. I'm going to be excited to talk to her. We also have terrorism expert Peter Bergen, who hasn't been on the show in a while. I like to try to make Peter Bergen laugh.
Oh, yeah.
He's a very serious man. So, we're going to be doing that tomorrow. Later in this show, we'll have a special giveaway for our Boston listeners. Tickets to Jimmy Tingle's American Dream, starring comedian Jimmy Tingle, who will join us by phone later this morning. His one-man show is playing at Jimmy Tingle's Off-Broadway Theater in Davis Square, Somerville, Mass. For tickets, go to jimmytingle.com. Also, for the benefit of for Air America and for Doug Krieger, who is hopefully sending us our sweet rolls as we speak, Air America is sponsoring a special panel discussion entitled Katrina's Wake, Our Government and the Common Good. It's next Tuesday night here in Manhattan. Go to airamericaradio.com for details. Our Air America's own Rachel Maddow will be there.
Yeah.
Katrina Vandenhoover.
Katrina Vandenhoover from The Nation.
Yeah, that's it. Yeah. Hey, you know what? My apartment building in Queens is becoming some sort of subversive commune.
What are you talking about?
Man, it's becoming like hip, buddy. I like the people that live downstairs from me, the guy who watches my cats, he's like a guitar player in a groovy band, and his wife is like this groovy actress person who does, they do improv and they do a lot of Conan O'Brien stuff. And now the woman who lives next door to me moved in. I'm pretty sure she's gay. I'm not sure.
Uh-oh.
But I don't want to say anything weird or bad. But they seem very hip and cool, and they listen to our show. And then downstairs from me, a writer from The Nation is moving in.
Really?
He's moved in. I don't know who he is. I'm so tempted to go down there. It's like when I'm prepping for the show the night before. It's like, hey, dude, can you help me out?
What do you got?
Let's throw around some ideas. Wow. You know, I don't know his last name.
You made your building trendy, Marin.
Yeah. I guess maybe I have. I don't
you
know.
You have. No, there's no doubt. Actors, Nation writers.
I know. And that we're all under the great umbrella of Carlos the Dentist. Carlos the Dominican Dentist. He owns a building. And his dental, I should get into too much detail. I realize sometimes when I talk on the show that people could know everything about me.
Yeah.
No. Yeah. No, I swear to God, Chris.
You don't think that lesbian, that supposed lesbian in your apartment building might not know that you mean her?
Well, but maybe I'm wrong, you know, and I don't want to judge people. You know what? I take that back. I don't know what it's wrong to judge people like that. I will say this, so she has a ferret. That's all I know. She has a ferret.
Who has a ferret?
She told me she had a ferret. She's got
I had a neighbor
ferret.
That had a ferret. That, a couple.
Right. That in and of itself makes my building not only hip, but peculiar. All right? Peculiar in a new way. For those of you who are just tuning in, here are a few highlights of what we talked about on the program. It's time for today's Morning's Edition Cliff Notes. President Bush has appointed a terrorism expert, Fran Townsend, to lead the federal investigation into the response to Hurricane Katrina. In a related story, the levee experts at the Army Corps of Engineers are still hard at work in the search for Osama bin Laden. A Dutch talk show host plans to take heroin on the air. It will be the first time a talk show host has ingested a highly intoxicating substance on the air since Johnny Carson accidentally took a sip out of Ed McMahon's mug. Hey, you know, Johnny was no slouch when it came to the schniz and whatnot. Rehearsals of the heroin segment were so successful, the host plans to do the show again a couple of times a day, every day, for the foreseeable future. Jeb Bush introduced the Florida State Legislature to a sword that he calls his mystical warrior friend Chang. That's not the joke, Pastor. That's actually the story. Actually, Mystical Warrior was George Bush's name in the Texas National Guard. A spokesperson for the Florida House of Representatives said it was probably a mistake to hold a lengthy session in the poorly ventilated chambers right after all the woodwork had been varnished. We got to tell that story now because people, this is a true story. Chang. Unfortunately, shortly after receiving the sword, Florida House Representative Marco Rubio traded it to the Dungeon Master for a 100-sided die and a flame shroud axe to slay orcs with.
Oh, Lord. Oh, my God.
This is true stuff. I'm not making this up.
No.
We've got radio theater coming up. I think Johnny K Street's coming by. You know, we might even do some honest-to-God news. But that Chang sword, that Chang thing, this is a real thing. Jeb Bush presented this guy, Rubio, who's the new Speaker of the House in Florida, with this sword. I don't think it was a joke. He gave a speech introducing this new speaker, this guy Marco Rubio.
Yeah.
And then he said, and I'm quoting, this is a quote from Jeb Bush, and this happened in the state legislature, in the House in Florida. Quote: Chang is a mystical warrior. Chang is someone who believes in conservative principles. He believes in entrepreneurial capitalism. He believes in moral values that underpin a free society. I rely on Chang with great regularity in my public life. He has been by my side, and sometimes I let him down. Oh, Chang, don't let Chang down. But Chang, the mystical warrior, has never let me down. Jeb Bush is out of his nut, dude. What is that about?
Those kids, wouldn't you be out of your nut?
Well, the kids are clearly out of nut. He changed them. You know, like, does he sit at home and going, this is not your father speaking, this is Chang, the mystical warrior. Stop doing drugs and getting drunk, you dummies.
But it seems to me like he went goth in this. He then tells the guy, I'm going to bestow to you.
Yeah.
What is that?
He gave him the sword.
Yeah.
I
bestowed to you.
He gave him a sword. What, the conservative warrior sword. Chang.
Yeah. Chang, the conservative warrior sword.
He's like, I use this on my kids. We give him a Chang bang.
Yeah, we changed him. Chang bang him. Oh, man. I wish that Jeb was available for comment. I mean, I'd love to be able to call him because clearly, if he's nutty enough to do this in public and talk about Chang, he might be crazy enough to talk to us.
Wait, is there a gubernatorial doctor in the house down there?
Probably many.
Maybe your dad could have a conversation with old Jim.
Certainly get him on the adaptogens.
This is what was happening in 2000. He was like, no, bro. Florida is yours. Chang is going to see you.
Chang is on it.
Everything.
That, didn't you see the t-shirts? Chang is on it from Florida, 2000. All right, here we go. So what are we doing? I know what we're doing. We're going to talk about maybe some real news, but probably not, because we're going to have Johnny K Street's going to come by, and later in the show we're going to have these documentary filmmakers that made this really stunning piece of work called Occupation Dreamland. I watched it last night about a platoon of soldiers in Iraq, and it was really one of the best things I've seen on it. And it's Mark Riley's birthday, and it's 16 past the hour, Air America Radio.
I'm Reverend Al Sharpton, and you're listening to Morning Sedition. Talk about the issues we're fighting for our lives here on Air America Radio.
Hey, 21 past the hour, it's Air America Radio's Morning Sedition. It's Mark Maron here with Mark Riley.
Hi.
The birthday boy, Pops Riley, 54 today.
Thank you.
We're going to do some media updates in just a couple of minutes. It is at Category 5. It is moving very quickly. There are some frightening possibilities, but we're not going to get into it right now. Just give us a couple minutes. There are lots of big stories in the news this week, so it's time to get some bets down with our own Inside the Beltway oddsmaker, Johnny K Street. Johnny, where's the action, man?
Follows me, baby.
So, Johnny, I got to ask you, how do you feel about the Gotti mistrial?
Who?
His case was just declared a mistrial.
Sorry, I'm not familiar with that name.
Yo, Johnny, you've never heard of Junior Gotti?
Junior who? I think there's something wrong with these headphones. I can't hear you. Is that feedback?
All right. Johnny, let's make some money. What kind of action do you have on Bush's response to Hurricane Rita?
When Bush heard there was another hurricane on the way, he freaked out. He's really concerned about the amount of damage to his polls.
Yeah.
Bush is so worried about looking like an idiot again, he slept less than Kate Moss in Colombia. Bush is going to be flying people out of the Gulf Coast faster than he flew Bin Laden's relatives out of the country after 9-1-1. Oh, that's going off at 500 to 1, baby.
All right, dude, put me down for a yard.
Yeah, that sounds solid to me, Johnny. Put me down for 5,000. I'm sorry, 500.
Oh, all right, wow, you're down. He's getting excited.
Yeah. He went down like a JetBlue jet. Bush is going to spend $200 billion in aid to corporations.
Uh-huh.
Supposedly he's going to raise the limit on government-issued credit cards to 250,000 clams.
Wow.
Yeah, all of Bush's big political contributors have already been pre-approved for one of those, if you know what I mean.
I do.
I'll give you a 500 to 1 odds on it.
All right, I'll take that for 100 for sure.
Hey, put me down for 5.
All right, there are two things you are guaranteed not to see in Louisiana in the next few months. Michael Brown and a poor person getting a $250,000 credit card from the government.
Hey, Johnny, you mentioned Kate Moss before. Did you have any action on her getting fired?
I had her at 8-5 to lose her job, but I'll tell you, I was as shocked as everyone when I heard the news. Who would have thought that a multimillionaire 90-pound supermodel with a drug-addicted boyfriend would ever touch cocaine? That's a shocker. How could I ever look at Fashion Week the same way again?
You go to Fashion Week?
Maybe.
Switching gears, Johnny, what's the action on Bush's poll numbers?
Bush's approval ratings have been about as stable as Renee Zellweger's marriage.
Oh.
We have Renee Zellweger fans here? I don't know. I'll give you 10-1. He drops another 5 points before the end of the year. Bush's numbers are lower than Dennis Miller's old ratings.
Oh, yeah.
He couldn't have had a worse poll if he were tights with covered in tar and feathers. That's going off at 200-1 if you're interested. I've got to go.
Hey, where are you going?
I got to go out to the hallway.
All right. Thanks so much, Johnny.
Thanks, Johnny.
Good seeing you. All right, man. Yeah, why did I go, ooh, when he mentioned Renee Zellweger? You know what? I do have I got a thing for Renee Zellweger. I got to be honest with you. I like her.
Really?
Yeah, I think she's good.
Okay.
I, even if she's chubby, you know.
What do you mean by I think she's good?
Even if she's chubby, the woman weighs 80 pounds.
No, but she goes up
you
and
mean
down.
The Bridget
for,
Jones thing? For, that's the only time she looks good.
Yeah, I know. I have nothing against. I like full figured women.
I take offense to that though. She's 130 pounds in those movies. That is not chubby.
What is that?
Wow.
I mean, that's
it's
just,
normal.
That's not right. It's a Hollywood.
Whoa! She's 3 feet tall. All right, so 130 pounds at 3 feet tall. I got to be honest with you, it's chubby.
I did forget that she's a gnome.
Yeah. No. I know she put on weight, but I just want to put that out there. I'm not judging anybody. I prefer people to be heavier. I don't like thin people like Brendan. I don't. I don't like because you're too thin. And there's part of me that has a resentment towards you.
I know that 250 pound wife of yours is looking pretty good.
Oh, yeah.
How much does
you married Christy Alley?
Do I have two? Do I have two? She doesn't weigh that much, does she? No, of course not. But she's not skinny. She's not. She is. All right.
Are you kidding me? When was the last time you looked at your wife?
Well, she lives in L.A. Thanks for bringing it up. You know, it's hard for me to look at my wife. No, but, I mean, you wouldn't look at her and say she's emaciated. She used to be much thinner when she was in another profession.
Right.
But she now is, she looks perfect. Oh, wow, I'm getting into some deep water here. Look, oh, man. Here we go. Let's shift gears from my wife's figure to Rita is now being called the third worst storm in the history of recorded storms, folks. It's expected to make landfall on Saturday in Texas. Could hit anywhere from southeast Louisiana to northeast Mexico. Texas, look, I wish I could read this email again. Maybe I'll do it a little later. I could probably read it again real quick. I got an email from this guy in named Charlie. He said, I was struck this evening by a curious coincidence. An overlay of the predicted storm track of Rita on a Google Earth view of Texas shows that God's aim is improving. It looks like hurricane force winds will pass right over our dear leader's home in Crawford. It looks like this is going to be another catastrophic hit on the American populace, and I grieve for the coming tragedy to our fellow Americans. However, maybe that is really a way to let us all know that God is talking to Mr. Bush, and that maybe God has decided that she's not too happy with Mr. Bush's compassionate conservatism. But in all honesty, people have been evacuated, a million plus people, 1 million. How many people have been evacuated? This is
1.2, 1.3,
wow,
somewhere in there.
That's unbelievable. Almost the entire city of Galveston has been evacuated. The National Guard, of course, this government now is going to be like, well, we'll show them who's in charge.
Yeah.
About 319,000 active National Guard troops have been put on duty, ready to go. They've moved about 1,000 or 1,100 out of the Katrina aftermath and moved them back into Texas Guardsmen. They're really going above and beyond. But still, in Houston, not enough government buses to take people out. Where are those pictures?
Huh? Nope.
That's the president's backyard, not prepared. Speaking of guardsmen, we are going to be talking to the filmmakers who created the Occupation Dreamland, a beautiful new documentary about a platoon in Iraq. Looking forward to talking to them. 27 past the hour, Air America Radio.
Morning Tradition with Mark Maron and Mark Riley on Air America Radio.
Now, the Morning Sedition old-time radio players present this installment of Morning Sedition Radio Theater.
This week, it's fun time for the kids at Uncle Mark's Treehouse.
Uncle Mark, why won't you come out of the bathroom?
Well, kids, Uncle Mark has something called social anxiety disorder.
What's that?
Well, you know how you feel when you go to the dentist? Well, instead of the dentist, imagine it's death. Or maybe people just think you're dead, but you're only paralyzed, and you're trying to scream for help as they lower you into the ground. Oh, God. Uncle Mark just found a lump in his armpit. I gotta go wash my hands for a while.
Uncle Mark, could you please come out of the bathroom? Otherwise, child services will take me away from you.
Well, that might be the best. Maybe you can live your life without being afraid of everything like I am.
It's okay. I'm not scared.
Really? Why not? Did you know 750,000 people still catch leprosy every year? And there's a tropical worm that can live in your body for 14 years and spawn larvae that swim into your eye and make you go blind? There, little man. I'll be right out as soon as I'm done washing. Hey, do you think I look fat?
This has been Uncle Mark's Treehouse on Morning Sedition Radio Theater.
35 past the hour. It's Mark Maron here with Mark Riley.
Hey.
It's Air America Radio's Morning Sedition program on the birthday of Pops Riley, who was 54 years old today.
54 years young.
That's it. That's young. And we got a couple of guests in the studio. Give them a little round of applause. Occupation Dreamland is a documentary that chronicles the lives of one squad of the 82nd Airborne Division based in Fallujah, Iraq, at the beginning of last year. It opens tomorrow in New York at Cinema Village East and in Boston and in Portland, Oregon as well. Our guests in the studio now are Garrett Scott, the director and producer of Occupation Dreamland, and specialist Joseph Wood, a member of Alpha Company, 1st Battalion of the 505th Parachute Regiment in the 82nd Airborne Division, who appears in the film. Good morning, fellas.
Morning.
Morning,
thanks,
guys,
for coming. I'll tell you, I watched it last night, and I found it to be a very... What's interesting about your film is that it's not so much about what happens in the film. It's about how you grow to know these guys, yeah. Joseph being one of them, and how you grow to know their different points of view and just the day-to-day intensity of what they were up against. And I've seen a couple of these type of documentaries. I think yours is by far the best.
Thank you.
What was your goal in making the film?
Really just to take home, bring back a piece of experience that's actually happening there, you know? I think very few of us know about how the war is actually conducted on a day-to-day level. It's really surprising. And, you know, it happens in a million different ways every day, but I think everybody should be able to know more about what's happening over there.
And Joseph, you were obviously in the platoon. Is that what we would call it? Is it a platoon?
Well, I wasn't in the platoon. I was in the company.
In the company. They asked everybody in the film, you were a bunch of different guys, why they got into the forces originally. And you kind of interested me because you seem the most like me in terms of what I was like, you know, at that age of that one would enlist. Why did you get in? Because you seemed to be going a different direction.
Yeah, it's really weird that part of that time in my life I was kind of, well, I wanted to go to college, and I had a plan. You know, I had plan. Like I said in the movie, I had plans to go to college, go to art school, and become a designer. Didn't have the college money, and I didn't want to, you know, stick around and work. So I was like, oh, well, I hear all these, you know, good things, these, you know, college benefits the Army's giving. So mm-hmm. I was like, oh, I'll go check it out. And kind of wanted to do something a little bit crazy. And,
yeah.
You know, get some cool experiences. But
yeah. And the guy who sold you on it. Yeah. What you guys are going through.
Exactly what I thought.
Certainly wasn't graphic design. Yeah. Now, what the guy, you mentioned in the film that you were sort of looking for the 2-year plan.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
And how did he sell you on 4?
Well, yeah. Well, the 2-year plan was the least you could do. And that's what I wanted to do. But when I went in there, he was like, oh, well, you know, you should do 4 years, you know, 2 years, you get 16,000 or whatever it was. Or maybe it was 20,000, I think. And then, you know, 4 years, 2 more years, you get 40, you get double that. And I was just like, I heard 40,000. I was like, yeah.
That's wild how they sell you in that, because in the film, Garrett, there's a point there where it's not, would it be called an enlister or is that a re-enlister? Because they bring these guys in the middle of Iraq where they've, you know, they're going through these nightly raids, they're going through this incredible tension and anxiety and just the hyper rush of being in that place. And then they bring them into a tent, I'm assuming that was, where they are told that they probably will go home and not have a life. So why not re-enlist? That was one of the most profound scenes in the film.
Right. Yeah, that's exactly what they say.
Yeah, but apparently they say it over and over again, right?
Yeah, yeah, definitely. I mean, they have...
How many of those did you go to in
the
last year?
I think they had, in the last year, they probably had 2 or 3 of them at least. That I can remember.
That's unbelievable because half the guys in the film were saying, well, you know, I think I do have a plan, and why these guys keep picking on us almost.
Yeah, it's almost like they're kind of making it just, they're making it harder for people to reenlist. It's like they're kind of defeating their purpose. It's like these guys obviously don't want to reenlist, and by forcing them, you're just making them not want to reenlist more, you know?
It's, and they're like taking shots at their self-esteem. At one point, the reenlister guy says, what are you going to do, go home and live with your mother?
Yeah, yeah.
Wow. And then they cut to the guy who I think is one of the guys that you know in the film. He says, yeah, I think I'm going to go live with my mother. What's wrong with living with your mother for 6 months after you get out of the armed forces?
Now, I was curious, Garrett Scott, you were able to spend this time with the 82nd Airborne. 82nd Airborne is one of the best-known military units in America. Were you surprised that you had that level of access to a division of soldiers that most Americans know, either 82nd or 101st?
Yeah, yeah. I wasn't expecting to be with those guys. I was planning on embedding with the National Guard unit who I'd visited before. That fell through for a number of reasons. Basically, they're about to leave. They've been there forever. And we had to scrounge for something quick. I mean, I was panicking there in Baghdad. I'm like, what are we going to do? You know, we've lost our unit. And then another journalist friend of mine was going to go out and see an operation the 82nd was conducting. Because I think one reason why they're such a well-known unit is because they, you know, they like their publicity, too. Mm-hmm. And they feel like, you know, they don't have anything to hide. They run a good unit. So this friend of mine, Christian Parenti, went out there, and we followed him out. and stayed for a weekend, and then we just asked those guys, hey, you know, we want to do this documentary about a squad. We're looking for some guys. Can we stick with you guys for another few weeks? And they said, well, hey, that sounds like a good idea.
We're talking to Garrett Scott, the director and producer of Occupation Dreamland. That opens here in New York City at the Cinema Village tonight, I believe, or tomorrow it is. Also talking, sitting That's with right. us here, Specialist Joseph Wood, who is a soldier who is in the film. There was a scene there, man. Chris Parenti is the writer, right?
That's right.
The son of Mark Parenti, is that true?
Michael Parenti. Michael, yeah.
Michael, Michael, yeah, he's a good writer, that guy. Now, there was a scene where there was gunfire. You're following these guys. You hear gunfire. And did I see your shoes? Did you hit the ground? Am I missing something?
That was my co-director Ian Olds. He was shooting over the guys. He was shooting his camera over the guy's shoulder, and the soldier jerked back because he was checking his guys and knocked Ian right on his
right. Because I got scared. I'm like, oh my god, they shot the guy with the camera. I mean, you literally saw his shoes for a second.
It's a funny moment.
And the thing that's really compelling about this, you know, in dealing with like you have Joseph Wood, who is here with us, he's in the film, and you bring a point of view of a guy who didn't know what he was going to do, but clearly wanted to do something in the arts. And you had another guy who was a bass player in a heavy metal band,
yeah,
like a death metal band.
That's
and
right.
He was the is he the captain? I'm bad with ranks.
No, I was too. He's the staff sergeant.
Okay,
he's
staff sergeant. Yeah, he's in charge of you guys. You got another guy that's just sort of like, I don't know what I'm doing here. Then you got another guy who was like very gung ho to be there. You really got all different points of view.
Yeah.
And there was almost in the film, there was a political debate starting to percolate, and it was about to happen. And then the staff sergeant says, look, you guys, not on camera.
He squashes it, yeah.
Yeah, but it wasn't in a malicious way. He's like, you guys can talk about whatever you want, but it's, you know, we do have to take orders. We are here because, you know, the president is our commander. We do this. We have to do what he says. So let's not do this on camera.
Yeah.
Would you say this is an anti-war movie, though? In your mind,
I would say, looking at this movie in Fallujah at the time, it doesn't look good, and I wouldn't think it's too far beyond what's happening in other places in Iraq, and mm-hmm. I know that from testimony from other soldiers that have been there for a long time.
Joseph Wood, when you're involved in a combat operation, what is it like for someone to live off that adrenaline that comes with having to deal with, you know, being shot out and having to shoot people? I'm not sure a lot of people that haven't been in combat understand what that's like.
Yeah, it's it's weird because you actually I get that asked a lot. You know, what's it like being there? Are you totally scared all the time? And it becomes reality, and you adapt to it, and you just the training kind of kicks in. You know, there's times when you. Fortunately, you don't always have to be like that. You know, there's a lot of downtime. So, but when you're in a situation like that, you know, it just your training kicks in, and you just kind of get in.
People were dipping the whole time and smoking cigarettes. And I understand. I used to smoke. I'm smoking cigars a little bit now, and I know that kind of helps you when you're jacked up like that. But I will recommend this movie highly because I just found it really detailed and really human about how. It was to be in Iraq and fighting in that situation. I also found it, you know, incredibly compelling in the sense that you really got to know these guys. And what was interesting throughout the movie is that no matter why they were there, the good intentions in terms of what you guys were there to do and what you guys were there to help people, it was interesting to see how a resentment began to grow and how that tone of like, you know, the hell with these people, they don't like us. And after you lost
That's
somebody.
Right.
In your platoon, that made it even more intense. But that was kind of interesting because that was the one thing that actually sort of grew throughout the film.
That's right.
But I would definitely go see it. I'm gonna watch it again myself, and I really appreciate you guys being here. We had Garrett Scott, the director and producer of Occupation Dreamland, Specialist Joseph Wood, and you're out now, so you're moving on to other things. You got a plan going?
Yeah, I'm going to art school right now. I go to Parsons School of Design.
All right.
Studying fashion design.
Okay, well, good, man. Well, I'm glad you're safe. Coming up next, we got Bruce Cherry's Pitch of the Week. So call us at 866-303-2270 if you want to feedback on Bruce. Yes, what's up, Garrett?
And one last thing. Go to the website, OccupationDreamland.com, if you want to learn more about the film.
Yeah, it's a great film. And as I said, it's opening tonight at the Cinema Village East here in New York and in Boston tomorrow. In Portland, Oregon as well tomorrow night. So please, go see this because it's one of the better documentaries about Iraq that I've seen. Thanks a lot, fellas. It's 46.
Thanks so much, guys.
You bet, man. It's 46 past the hour. Bruce Cherry coming up next. Air America Radio's Morning Sedition.
Join the Morning Sedition right now. Call 866-303-2270.
What?
That's 866-303-2270.
You don't know until you've tried this.
Morning Sedition on Air America Radio.
Damn good.
Fifty past the hour, Air America Radio's Morning Sedition program. I'm Mark Maron. That's birthday boy Pops Riley over there.
50, hey.
54 today. 54 years young.
Yeah.
How do you like that? Look, as many of you know, one of our writers, let me give you the number, 866-303-2270 ahead of time. As many of you know, one of our writers, Bruce Cherry, has been trying to get a regular character on the show, and so far he's pitched us pirates, mentally retarded spies, an animal-loving clown, a carnivorous marsupial, among other things. So far, none of his bits have been approved, despite what he thinks is overwhelming acclaim by the public, but he's still trying, and he's still pitching. So right now, please welcome back writer Bruce Cherry for Bruce Cherry's Pitch of the Week.
Thank you very much, Mark.
That was,
I would like to change the name of the bit to Profiles in Courage.
Oh, yeah.
Because what if I flourish, though, under adversity, okay?
Well, give it to him.
When life hands me crap,
yeah.
I make crap aid. Okay? And I've been reduced to some extreme measures, and okay. This is what I did. But this is what I did.
Okay.
I flourished. I piggybacking, all right?
Okay.
I took one of your successful characters,
mm-hmm.
and I created a spinoff,
okay.
like Morgan Mindy from Happy Days, okay?
Okay.
That's a positive, okay? It's all called right. a selling point.
Okay.
I've wedded the handmaidens of commerce and creativity.
Okay.
Okay?
Yeah,
now,
ready.
You know your Washington inside odds maker, Johnny Casey.
Sure,
he was just
sure.
on. He was just
yeah.
on, right?
Yeah.
Get ready. This is
the pitch?
One. Johnny Gay Street. Okay, don't react right away, okay?
Yeah, okay.
I'm walking a tightrope here.
Okay, all right. I'm not going
to
judge.
Johnny Gay Street himself has agreed to do the sample script with us.
Okay.
So now every week, just to set it up, you start a Johnny Gay Street just like it would be normally.
Okay.
And Johnny Gay inserts himself. See? It writes itself.
Okay.
Let's right. go to script, okay?
So you want me to go to the,
here we go.
The script? All right,
this
here
would
go.
Be a Johnny Gay Street, and I come in as a surprise.
I get it. All right, so we'll give it a try.
Yeah, okay.
All right. No, it sounds interesting. I'm curious about how...
Quick on the take.
Okay, I'm sorry. All right, so I'm going to... Let's try the script now. Hey, Johnny K Street, where's the action?
It follows me, baby.
I wish it would follow me. This town is duller than your wardrobe, Johnny.
Yeah, Johnny, I noticed you had a friend with you today. Who is this?
Madon, it's my cousin Mario. I think he's a fanook.
A fanook? What does that mean?
I think it means I'm a made man. I certainly wouldn't mind being made, if you know what I mean.
Yeah, this is my cousin. They call him Johnny Gay Street.
You know, Johnny Gay Street, your cousin here is our Inside the Beltway odds maker.
Really? I'm kind of an insider myself.
Look, Johnny Gay, I can't have you hanging around. I'm in a dangerous business.
Mike, a little bit more of the top, okay? Look, Johnny Gay, I can't have you hanging around. I'm in a dangerous business.
Bruce, it's my character, and he's not an organ grinder.
Yeah, okay, just keep going, okay? Okay, pick it up where you were.
All right. Johnny Gay, I can't have you hanging around. I'm in a dangerous business.
So I hear. Well, cousin, if we ever have to go to the mattresses, I have your back.
Oh,
brother.
Let me come up with a diamond mine for a second.
Okay.
And, just, by now, the topical element should be obvious, okay? The character of Johnny Gay Street shatters stereotypes.
What, by doing every dumb gay joke in the book?
No. We're not doing the gay jokes. We're mocking them by milking the hell out of them.
All right.
It's the mock and milk, okay?
All right. Wait, let me just... 866-303-2270 if you're in the middle of this bit and you want to say yay or nay. Go ahead. So are we going to finish this here?
Let's finish it. We've
okay.
got a couple lines.
All right.
Okay.
All right.
This is the best line in the script.
Okay.
All right. Johnny Gay Street, I should have you whacked.
Promises.
All right.
Mark, let me just say here that this character is revolutionary. To the discerning listener, it's obviously a brilliant deconstruction of everything it appears to actually be.
Thank you, Mike, for enjoying that enough to praise it while actually in character. Well, Mike likes it. It's a go.
I don't know, man. I just, like, it seems to me that it's only going to become more stereotypical. Where do you go with it, Bruce? I gotta say no, man.
Well, I'm not even going to mention Sonny the Sperm Cell.
Wait a minute. Sonny the Sperm Cell? No way. There's no way we can do that. We've already got Sammy the Stem Cell. Sonny the Sperm Cell. Look, Bruce, you did great. I appreciate the pitch. And I tell you, I'm starting to enjoy it as much as I like the pitch itself. That's the whole idea.
Yeah, well, now you have a backlog of characters that you can.
So we're gonna. So we will definitely see you next week with Bruce Cherry's pitch of the week. Let's. Are we gonna take a call or two now? Here we go, Dan. How are you, Dan? What do you think, Dan?
I just Monday was Talk Like a Pirate Day. Arr, and I remember that old pitch.
Yeah.
This pitch, I laugh so much I'm going to have to go to liberal confessional.
Oh, well, that's great. The pitch worked.
Somebody is not obviously on your bash Bruce agenda.
No, but, okay, you know, maybe I misunderstood the bit. Maybe it does have the power to bring on social change, Bruce.
It does. That is the power. You're starting to see the world through my eyes.
Oh, no. Does that mean I'm going to have to buy a bunch of old records?
No. Don't you make fun of my chocolate watch band.
Bruce, we're going to go to Washington, D.C. tomorrow, and I'm sorry you can't go with us. But maybe
actually could have gone with you, but I was not really asked.
Yeah, but I think that really hinges on creating a character that works and can travel. Is Chris in Iowa have anything to say? Chris in Iowa, what do you think of Bruce Cherry's newest pitch?
Hi, good morning, Bruce. Good
morning, Chris.
I like you, am a two-bit comedy hack. I think I'm funny, and I'm not.
Oh!
So I just wanted you to take that first step. The first step is the hardest. And we'll be here for you, brother. We will be here for you.
Well, the step towards what?
Yeah, keep working the funny bones in Des Moines.
Don't we get the hang-up noise? The guy didn't even follow through. What does he know? What does he know? He's in Iowa. Bruce, please don't cry.
No, hey, I can take criticism.
The crying comic. How about that? That's a good pitch.
Yeah.
The crying comic guy that tries a joke and he cries.
I'm a hero.
57 past. We'll be back. We're going to be talking to Maxine Waters, so stay with us. It's Air America Radio's Morning Sedition. Six past the hour, Air America Radio's Morning Sedition program. I'm Mark Maron. That's Pops Riley. Is 54 years old today, Mark Riley.
Thank you very much.
Happy birthday. What a day it's been. You missed the call. We had a cake for him earlier this morning. If you're just coming in, we didn't even fake it. We had a real cake with candles. He blew them out. We've eaten all of it. What is it about Entenmann's? How is Entenmann's always consistently good and moist? I don't want to know, so don't email
it's
me.
It's addicting.
It's full of chemicals. I'm sure I'm going to get the emails. Entenmann's is guilty. Entenmann's was invented by Nazis. And that's some weird, you know.
Nazis on Long Island.
They use chemicals created by the Bayer Company that was owned by Krupps in the early 20s. And I don't need it, all right? I had a nice, moist Entenmann's piece of cake. We got a little bit of news I wanted to share with you here. This is a JetBlue flight with 145 passengers and crew made an emergency landing at L.A. International Airport on Wednesday after a malfunction turned the front landing gear sideways and forced the pilot to abort a transcontinental flight. Now, the scary thing about this is it took off from Burbank, yes?
Burbank to Kennedy.
So it was going to Kennedy. So I guess the landing gear got locked up, and they had to fly around until they could make a decision to land it, but to land it without landing gear. Now, the scary thing is this is a flight that I would take. This is a flight that my wife could have been on. This is a flight that I'm glad all these people are safe, but I know this flight. I know JetBlue. These are new planes, and the horrific thing about it is JetBlue has TVs on the back of every
seat.
So what were these people watching?
Themselves.
Oh, brutal.
Yep.
You imagine watching the plane go around listening to the people on CNN saying, well, there might be trouble. I would hate to be on that plane right now because they got no way to land.
Yeah.
And you're sitting there just making your last calls.
Praying. Somebody did a farewell video camera, videotape for his girlfriend.
Some kid, right? He's a comic. I didn't know his name.
Yeah.
He made a farewell. That's funny. I mean, I don't think he was planning on being funny, but that's the funniest thing ever. In retrospect, now that he's safe, to be sitting there taping himself next. next to somebody else who's panicking, going, "Well, baby, this is going to be
this
it.
Gonna be it."
Maybe we'll get that
sell
guy
it on eBay.
The show. Let's get into something. I'm glad that ended well, or we wouldn't have been able to laugh at that.
Absolutely.
All right. So, look, Hurricane Rita is now a, as most of you know, a Category 5 storm, which means it could have winds up to 175 miles an hour. It's very frightening. It's supposed to make landfall on Saturday. It could, it's definitely. Well, I don't want to say definitely because it's hard to know, but it's looking like it's going to hit Texas on Saturday. It could hit anywhere from southeast Louisiana to northeast Mexico. This is a, you know what, Texas, God doesn't like Bush or delay. I'll tell you that right now. It just took him a, now I will say that that Bush has said, quote, "The terrorists look at the storm and wish they had caused it." So this is his big response this time, is that he's going to try and link the storm to terrorism. But I will say this, the federal government is going above and beyond the call of duty. They have mobilized about 319,000 National Guard troops all across the country. 1,100 from Texas were actually returned to Texas from Katrina duty to get ready for Rita. An ironic thing is, Houston's mayor said there were not enough government vehicles to evacuate everybody from the city's vulnerable areas and ask the public to help out. Now, this is Houston. This is Bush's old hometown. So is he going to start throwing blame around to them, at them? Where are those parking lots filled with school bus pictures from Houston? Where are those?
Yeah, it's a very good question. I'm going to tell you something else that's going on right now as we speak, Mark.
Yeah.
Crude oil, gasoline prices are jumping. Natural gas has reached a record. Royal Dutch Shell PLC, ConocoPhillips, and Valero Energy have closed four refineries near Houston. The nation's largest import terminal stopped unloading tankers this morning.
That's,
Crude oil for November delivery, this is on the New York Mercantile Exchange, rose by $1.15. What this all means is that the impact at the pump from Rita may be bigger than the impact from Katrina.
I tell you, I can't even imagine, because even before any of this storm stuff, they were already sort of forecasting that heating oil was going to be at like an all-time high this winter. It was going to compromise people completely. It's going to, you know, people who are strapped and who live in cold places that have to run their home's heating system on heating oil, the prices were supposed to be exorbitant even before these storms hit. It's very bad news for the economy. It's very bad news for the people who have been displaced. Some people have been displaced twice now. Mm-hmm. People who were evacuated to Houston are being evacuated again. I will say one thing about this particular evacuation, that at least the federal government has learned a little bit in terms of evacuating people who are sick, people who are in hospitals, people in retirement homes, because these people in many cases in New Orleans were abandoned. Their life support systems broke down. So they are taking some repercussions that they did not take. But this is a, you know, I'm sorry they had to learn it the way they learned it. They should have been prepared initially. We know where the hurricanes are going to hit. And as some of you talking point spewing idiots out there, you Republican point heads are spewing that, the Democrats are trying to blame Bush for the weather. No, the Democrats and reasonable people in this world are trying to blame him for a lack of appropriate response, for not being prepared. So if he is prepared this time, if the federal government is prepared, they are taking every action necessary. Good. But it should have been done before. We know where the storms are going to hit.
You know, it shouldn't have taken two hurricanes to get this government to get it right. This is politically Bush's shot at redemption. 319,000 National Guard mobilized. I didn't know there were that many still left in the country. I thought they were all shipped over to Iraq.
Well, this is all over the country. And I imagine on some level mobilized means, look, you could end up flying to Texas. You could end up flying to the Gulf. Mm-hmm. You could end up flying down to deal with this. So mobilized, I mean, I imagine that means alerted. Now, the scary thing about this, outside of just the reality of another Category 5 hurricane about to, you know, pummel the coast of this country, of Texas and New Orleans, is that the Army Corps of Engineers says New Orleans levees can only handle up to 6 inches of rain and a storm surge of 10 to 12 feet. So if this even mildly, not mildly, but a little more than mildly, comes down on New Orleans, there's a real chance that that city could fill up again. And that is a horrendous possibility, Riley.
It is an absolutely horrendous possibility. It could mean that New Orleans will, you know, continue to be uninhabitable. It could mean that the four refineries that have been shut down and that part of the Gulf Coast will remain shut down. And by the way, this is having worldwide repercussions.
Our next guest is a Democratic congressman representing California's 35th district. She's also a member of the Congressional Black Caucus. Please welcome to Morning Sedition, Maxine Waters. Good morning, Congresswoman.
How are you doing?
Good morning, Congresswoman. How are you doing?
Hi, I'm doing well.
We're glad you're here. Now, yesterday, the CBC, the Congressional Black Caucus, issued their opposition to the nomination of Judge John Roberts. Thank you for doing that, first of all. What is it about his record specifically that you guys are most concerned about?
Well, there are several things. One of the things we're concerned about is we don't feel that we really, first of all, know who he is.
Yeah.
They have avoided giving us, you know, the committee, rather, the papers that have been asked for, the memorandums, things by which we can have judge him. We think it's very strange that the administration would deny access to records that would clearly define him. We are very concerned about voting rights and whether or not he supports the kind of voting rights reauthorization will support that. That will make sure that we have tough oversight on these areas that come under Section 5, areas of jurisdictions who have a history of doing things that would deny people equal rights, you know, voting rights.
But certainly, if you look at
concerned about that and other things.
If you look at his record as the assistant White House counsel under Reagan, I mean, it would certainly imply that that his civil rights records are pretty awful.
Yes, just from the limited information that we have, we believe that, you know, he certainly does not support affirmative action. He does not support set-asides in any way. He does not support the White House, did not support the White House, in particular Reagan, doing anything that would really make sure that those gains that we were making in civil rights would be protected.
Congresswoman Waters, are you talking now about the CBC wanting a filibuster here in the Senate? Harry Reid, the Senate Minority Leader, says he opposes Roberts, but he is not in favor of a filibuster. What do you think?
Well, to tell you the truth, I've given up on the Senate really putting up a fight or really being convinced that they should work to deny him this nomination. They have made up their minds already. You can see it. I mean, I'm glad Reid came out and said that he was going to vote against him. But, you know, even from the first moment that they took up the nomination, they were saying, well, we're going to raise questions, but it's really a done deal. He's going to be confirmed, you know. He combs his hair right. He's got 2.5 children and a wife that looks okay. I mean, they had decided that, you know, he's going to be nominated.
Right.
So I'm not really into any of the games, you know.
Yeah.
And even for Dianne Feinstein, you know, who said she was going to be tough on freedom of choice and abortion, you know, I really believe most of them are going to vote for him.
Wow. We're talking to Congresswoman Maxine Waters. I want to shift the focus now to the hurricane. I know you visited the New Orleans soon after Katrina came in. I know that it seems like the federal government is trying to do better this time. What are your impressions about how they're responding to this one? And more importantly, do you think that the fact that many of the victims in New Orleans were black had anything to do with the slowness of the president's first response?
Yes, absolutely. Let me just say this. We have appropriated over $60 billion already, but this cleanup and this response to Katrina is going to cost more in the neighborhood of $250 billion to $300 billion. The president made a good speech and made some promises and sounded as if he was accepting responsibility, but at the same time, he used his executive power to waive Davis-Bacon so that they don't have to pay prevailing wages to the people who would be doing the work.
That's right.
They gave the first no-bid contracts to his friends.
Unbelievable.
Halliburton and Fluor Corporation and the big Shaw Group Louisiana that's well connected with them. Also, I'm looking up some information where they told me he's waived some labor department laws that would make it easier not to have, you know, broad representation in the contracting work. It's a, something like affirmative action where you're reaching out.
Oh, you don't have to do the research. We already did it. They are waiving it. It's on their website.
All right. Okay. Well, you see, that's why the proof of the pudding is in the eating. This guy's talking a good game, but in fact, he's going down the same path that they always go, making sure that the big guys make the money.
Tried
not to, you know, actually get behind the appropriations in ways that will benefit, you know, the least of these. We're going to have to deal with them on housing.
That's
They're
right.
They're going to ask for 50,000 Section 8 vouchers. We want 350,000
oh, right on.
Section 8 vouchers. So that fight will be on the floor in a day or two.
Well, Maxine Waters, I tell you, it's been great talking to you. We want to check in with you pretty regularly.
Okay,
is that all right with you?
Good.
All right, Congressman Maxine Waters, thank you so much.
You're so welcome. Thank you.
Well, we'll talk to you soon. It's 19 past the hour. We will be back. We're going to give away some tickets to our fans up there in Boston to the next Jimmy Tingle one-man show. So that's tonight and this weekend. It's going to be running for a few weeks. So stay tuned for that. It's 19 past the hour. I said that already. It's Morning Sedition.
MorningSedition.com. Our guests, our comedy, your blog. MorningSedition.com. Air America Radio.
Twenty-three past the hour. It's Mark Maron here with Mark Riley.
Hi.
The birthday boy.
Thank you.
That's right. 54 years old today, Mark Riley is. It's Morning Sedition on Air America Radio. We're going to be broadcasting live from Washington, D.C. tomorrow. Got Cindy Sheehan's going to come in and hang out with us. I got some things I want to talk to her about because I've heard some things. I've heard she hasn't been treated too well in some places. I want to get to the bottom of that. And we got terrorism expert Peter Bergen's going to be there. Right now, though, I think we have a surprise caller on the phone. Hello.
Happy birthday, Daddy.
Hi, Vivi. How you doing?
Good.
Good. What are you guys up to there at the house?
Good morning, sweetie. Happy birthday.
Good morning, honey. Happy birthday. Oh, happy birthday. It's not your birthday, but thank you very much. I loved my presents to death.
Well, we've got a really big apology to make.
Uh-oh. What'd you break?
The Brazilian dancing girls just left. They said they couldn't wait for you.
Well, that's okay. We'll hire one of them to clean the house. How about that?
You can clean your house. Or are you just sitting in your massage chair listening to your iPod?
Yeah, there you go.
Well, thanks for calling you
guys. Thanks for calling you guys. I'll see you in a little while, okay?
Happy birthday.
Thank you. I love you both.
Bye.
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 Wow.
There
Thank you,
go.
Fellas.
That was Kim
you guys
and your
hooked
daughter,
that up, huh?
Your wife, Kim, and your daughter, Vivica. Yeah, we called them. We actually knew the number. Now, Wayne Gilman's got...
Wait a minute. What do you
Wayne
got
Gilman.
In there?
Mr. Riley.
What's that, a can of tuna?
Well,
what?
He's got a... 59th birthday.
59?
Yeah, right, exactly.
Oh,
Mark has been lying all morning long.
Oh,
I've known him 30 years.
59th birthday.
You know, Maron, to be honest with you, when you get to Mark's age, there are two things to think about.
Right.
First thing came to my mind this morning, roughage.
Roughage?
And stimulants.
Oh.
So I had a choice, you know.
That's it, huh?
I don't want to be too graphic because I know your family's listening.
Yeah, thank you very much.
Particularly your daughter. I'm
Roughage and
about
that's what
yeah.
I have to look forward to. Roughage
well, I was about to
stimulants.
Bring in some weed germ, but I think he needs a stimulant at this point.
Wait a minute. What is it?
Well, Mr. Riley, on your 59th birthday.
Oh, thank you very much. You and Reverend Sharpton went halves on this?
Yeah, we did. We did. Exactly.
You know, are you going to open it? Yeah, it's great.
Yeah, wait a minute.
Now, Wayne, you've known Mark for 30 years.
Well, 30 plus years.
30 plus years, yes.
Yeah.
So we both started out as fresh-faced interns together.
Yeah. So,
back
but,
in the day.
What is the age difference here?
Well, I
couple
hope a lot
months.
Better than he does. Yeah. You know, just
I was
I'm
born
not
September
much younger.
22nd. He was
Don't
born
even
Pearl
try
Harbor
that.
Day,
He's
December 7th.
Okay.
Same year.
The
same.
Biggest canard going for the last 30 years.
No, no, the biggest canard is out there in the harbor, all right? Don't be that biggest canard.
I'm 5 years younger than Mark.
Oh.
I look.
That's what he tells all the hotties.
Are you 5 years younger?
He's lying like a rug. He used to tell people he was born in 1961 instead of 51.
See, I was born in 63.
63?
Yeah.
Maron, 63?
Yeah. I'm young, right?
I was in the seventh grade at 63.
What'd you get? What'd you get? What do you got in the
what
present?
What are these, lottery tickets?
Yeah, you need some of those.
I need a lottery ticket. Uh-oh.
No, don't discuss that. You know, but
oh.
The deal is that's going to help you.
That's help me do what?
Well, get
big
help
and
you
drunk?
Later.
Got a little set of miniatures there.
For my next JetBlue flight.
Being a non-drinker, my hands are starting to shake. Hey. Let me see what you got.
They're beautiful. If I'm 3 hours over LAX, I'll be fine.
Yeah, well.
Look at me. I'm like, just let me touch the bottles.
Herbal supplement.
We got a little Bacardi Gold. We got a little bit of Finlandia, and we got a little Jack Daniels. Oh, my God, it's my favorite Jack
Daniels. And some lottery tickets.
Please take these out of my hand. It's 27 past the hour. Jimmy Tingle's coming up next, and we're going to give away some tickets to see him up there in Boston. So stay with us on Morning Sedition.
John Bolton was appointed by President Bush to be the ambassador to the United Nations. Bush probably figured, look, if somebody appointed me president, I'm appointing him as ambassador. Bolton was an odd choice because he hates the UN. It's sort of like getting the new pope to run Planned Parenthood. It seems like I'm... And that new pope's a wild guy, huh? 78-year-old German man. That'll lighten things up.
34 past the hour, Air America Radio's Morning Sedition. You're listening to Jimmy Tingle from his new show, Jimmy Tingle's American Dream. We're going to talk to Jimmy in just a second, but it's time for a special giveaway for our Boston listeners. Now is your chance to win tickets to Jimmy Tingle's American Dream, starring comedian Jimmy Tingle. His one-man show is playing at Jimmy Tingle's Off-Broadway Theater in Davis Square, Somerville, Massachusetts. To buy tickets, go to jimmytingle.com or be one of the first five callers right now at 866-303-2270. The first five callers each get a pair of tickets to see Jimmy Tingle in Boston. So call 866-303-2270 now. If you don't win now, stick around. We'll give away a few more tickets in just a couple minutes after we talk to Jimmy on the phone. As I said, our next guest, he is a stand-up comic, a political humorist. He's appeared on Jay Leno, Conan O'Brien, his own HBO special. If you're in Boston, you can catch him in his one-man show, as I said before, Jimmy Tingle's American Dream. Please welcome to Morning's Edition, Jimmy Tingle. Good morning, Jimmy. How are you? Buddy.
Good morning, Mark. How are you?
Hey, Jimmy.
We're good,
Happy
man.
Happy birthday, my friend.
Thanks a lot, man.
There you go.
Great show you guys have, man. It's dynamite.
I appreciate it, Jimmy. So what? So this is exciting. This is the first one-man show you've done in a while, huh?
Yeah, I haven't done one in a while, and it's great to be up and working. That's the reason I started this theater, and I know you've been up there, Mark.
Great theater.
Love having you up here. But that's the reason I started the theater, for a place to work, because a lot of the, you know, it's difficult to do political humor in the clubs, as you know. It can get a little tough, and so the theater is a place you can stretch out, do more political humor, talk about what's going on in the world. And we just got this beer and wine license, which is pretty wild, Mark.
That helps. Uh-oh. That helps people.
Yeah, you know, it's funny because a friend of mine said, Jim, you should get a beer and wine license. I said, I don't want a beer and wine license. I said, I quit drinking 15 years ago.
Yeah.
I had a spiritual awakening. I help other people quit drinking. He said, Jim, you can make $400 or $500 a night with a beer and wine license. I said, who am I to control others? Is that really my job in life, to tell other people what they should do?
Yeah, everyone's got to make their own decision.
Exactly. And the irony is, when I went to get the beer and wine license, yeah, a guy in the car I was bringing to detox. I
said,
you wait here. I got to go into City Hall for a quick meeting. I'll be right out. They're supposed to take me at 6 o'clock. 6 o'clock, they come, they don't call me. 6:15 comes, they don't call me. 6:30 comes, they don't call me. Now I have a moral dilemma.
Yeah.
Do I help the sick and suffering alcoholic, or do I get the beer and wine license? Well, as I indicated, we have the license. Just then, divine intervention, the woman came up and said, Mr. Tingle, you've been approved of the license. You can leave. I said, thank you, thank you, thank you. Got in the car, took the man to the hospital. The man is doing fantastic, Mark. And here's the moral to this story.
Yes.
If you have a drinking problem, you can come to Jimmy Tingle's Off-Broadway Theater in Davis Square, Somerville. You can have your last beer. I will personally take you to rehab. That's the kind of socially conscious corporation we are.
There you go.
Yeah, but now you can have one guy in the room during the middle of the show. He's going to go, you told me to come. I'm wasted.
It'll probably be a family member. Sit down.
So now this is pretty much, I'm assuming by the title, Jimmy Tingle's American Dream, you're taking on, what, the last couple of years of the Bush presidency?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah, among other things. I mean, you know, you see the horrible situation down in and I mean, everything that's going on in the world. I mean, the horrible situation and Hurricane Katrina.
Sure. Yeah.
You know, I don't know if you know this, but little known fact, the hurricane destroyed the historic home of Jefferson Davis, the president of the Confederacy.
Oh.
It also destroyed the home of Trent Locke, his heir apparent. But the president said, I look forward to the day Trent's going to rebuild a home. He's going to have a grander home. And I look forward to sitting on the porch of his grander home and having a nice tea. And the poor were comforted.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, as always. Because they know they got a job serving the president his iced tea. So you're pretty up to date with this stuff.
Yeah, I mean, and the stuff in Iraq is crazy. You know what's the crazy thing about Iraq? Colin Powell said, look, don't go there. I've been to Vietnam. It's not a good idea. I've been in these insurgency type of situations. You don't want to be in that situation. They didn't listen to him. They listened to all these Iraqi defectors who had their own political and business agenda.
Mm-hmm.
These are the people who are trying to tell us that the Iraqis are going to welcome us with open arms. Evidently, something got lost in the translation. I think what they were trying to say is they're going to open fire with small
That's it.
And no weapons of mass destruction. They told us those trailers out in the desert were mobile chemical and nuclear weapon labs. And I guess what made the inspector suspicious is one of the trailers had Nevada plates. Dead giveaway. Right there.
So a lot of people don't realize, Jimmy, that theater up there, the Jimmy Tingle Off-Broadway Theater, you do a lot of different shows up there. When I was up there, Stephen Wright dropped by. That was something.
That was great.
So
yeah.
How long is your show running? What else you got going on?
I got
the
an open-ended run right now. That
really? You know the owner?
Huh?
You know the owner?
I know the owner, man. That's a great thing about having your own place. You can book yourself. I needed a place to work, Mark.
And
I'm going to be running up there for at least through Thanksgiving. We might be doing the Ding Ho reunion again this year.
Oh, that's fun.
We did that last year. That's when we had Stephen Wright, the great Barry Cremins, who's the producer at Randy's show, Randy Rhodes. Doing a fantastic job. I loved listening to him live from Crawford, Texas. That was excellent.
Yeah.
I look forward to hearing Cindy Sheehan tomorrow when you have her on.
Yeah, me too.
And we're just trying to do our best here. We do a lot of community-related events and trying to make sense out of the world and trying to come up with, add some humor to the whole horrible situation. Like, even I came up with a nonviolent way to even avoid the whole war in Iraq. No one listened to me. A month before the war started, I'm watching 60 Minutes. My old friend Dan Rather is interviewing Saddam Hussein on National television. I'm yelling at the television set, Dan, grab him. Get him in the headlock and drag him off to the International Criminal Court that we opposed.
Jimmy, I got to ask you, I wonder, there are a lot of stand-up comics, very few of them own their own spaces. Talk about how you came to own Jimmy Tingles. How did you came to actually be in control of your own destiny?
Well, what happened is I was looking for a place to work, and this theater was up there, and it was under a different ownership, and they were going to book me, and I walked in and said, look, okay, you need, like, lights, sound, a box office, you need a way to, people can get tickets. The guy goes, I don't want to do this anymore. He said, if you want to run the theater, you want to talk to the landlord, maybe you can take over the lease. So I did, and I always wanted my own place. It's really a place for me to work and for other performers and productions to work, and that's really it. And I'm the CEO and president of the theater, That's pretty bizarre right there, I have to tell you, because you end up doing a lot of things that aren't necessarily in the job description of the CEO. For example, last winter, it's a snowstorm. I'm up there on the ladder. Mark's been there. I'm changing the marquee, right?
Yeah.
Okay, so I'm up there on the ladder changing the marquee. It's nighttime. By the way, this is how bizarre it is. I'm putting my name back up there, okay? Because I had misspelled it earlier in the day. So I'm putting my name up on the marquee. Homeless guy walks by and goes, Hey, are you Jimmy Tingle? Are you the guy that used to be on 60 Minutes? I said, why, yes, I am. How are you changing your own sign? Because I'm the only one at the theater with insurance. He starts telling all the homeless guys, hey, see that guy in the ladder? He used to be on TV.
Yeah, right.
Fuck?
So
it's a lot of fun. It's a ton of work, but I love it. I love the shows that we've had there. We had Janine and Sam Cedo came by for the Unconventional Comedy Convention when we did that when the Democratic Convention was up here.
Oh, that's right. Yeah. And hopefully we're going to bring this show up there. I think we talked a little bit about that.
That would be great.
Because we did it across the street. We were up there in Somerville. I love Somerville because my favorite rib joint in the world is there, the Red Bones across the street. And we did it at that nice coffee shop. What's that place called,
I can't remember the name of it.
The Someday Cafe.
Someday Cafe. They were great. So I'm thinking maybe what we could do, Jimmy, and just hear me out on this idea. We get the Someday Cafe to bring coffee. We get Red Bones to cook us breakfast. And we do the show from the Jimmy Tingle Off-Broadway Theater.
I love it. And we got the beer and wine license.
So then if you're an alcoholic and want to get started at 6 in the morning, you have that option.
Free.
All right, so the show is Jimmy Tingle's American Dream. As Jimmy said, it's running at the Jimmy Tingle Theater, Jimmy Tingle Off-Broadway Theater, through Thanksgiving. You can go for tickets. tickets. If you want to buy them, you can go to jimmytingle.com or call 617-591-1616. 617-591-1616. You can call right now to win a, we're going to give away five more pairs at 866-303-2270. Jimmy, it's great talking to you. If this for tonight's show, we're giving the tickets away for.
Yes, sir. And you know what? I got to tell you, this is a great area of the country. We loved having you up here, Mark. It's a very liberal area. We even got the whole gay marriage thing happening here.
Yeah?
It's hilarious. It's legal here, folks. So come on up to Massachusetts, because the opponents of gay marriage are trying to tell us that if we allow the gays to get married, that could threaten conventional marriage. I'm saying, really? How? I've been happily married for 10 years. When am I going to walk out of my theater one night and go, you know, I've had 10 blissful years with my lovely wife, Catherine, but what about Chuck?
Maybe. Okay, Jimmy, so have a great show tonight. Have a good run.
Thanks, pal. Great to talk to you, and I'll see you guys up here. And happy birthday again, Mark.
All right, man. Thanks, Jimmy.
Bye-bye.
All right, that's Jimmy Tingle, 866-303-2270. We're giving away five more pairs of tickets for tonight's show up there in Somerville at Jimmy Tingle's Off-Broadway Theater. If you're in the area up there, or you're going to the area, you want to go see Jimmy, it'll be a nice show. And as he said, they have a beer and wine license now.
Hell yeah.
And you've got a little four-pack of booze there.
Should I donate it? Oh, no, sorry. No beer or wine here.
You're going to be traveling today. You might as well get, maybe you and Kim can get drunk on a couple of shots.
No, none of that.
Okay. All right, so look, we're going to be come back. We're going to tell you what's going on this tomorrow. We're going to D.C., and we're going to do the Cliff Notes, and we'll talk. And, oh, yeah, we're going to tell you about Jeb Bush's sword. Ooh. It's 44. Past the hour, Air America Radio's Morning Sedition.
This is Wayne Gilman, better known to the hard body mamas of the greater New York metropolitan area as Newsday. When I'm not busting a cap in some jive cat's ass for hogging the printer when I'm on deadline, I'm having a funky good time with Morning Sedition on Air America Radio.
Ooh, Newsday!
But look who's awake. Ready for another taste of Wayne?
Morning Sedition on Air America Radio.
All right, we're going to do this now. We're going to put this down easy, not like JetBlue.
Yeah, yeah.
We'll be broadcast. You know, it's a shame because I like JetBlue. I'm still going to fly JetBlue. Those are good planes, except for apparently
one
of them. We'll be broadcasting live from Washington, D.C. tomorrow, so make sure to tune in. We'll have Cindy Sheehan with us, plus terrorism expert Peter Bergen. Who knows who else? He's, of course, the only guy, one of the only Western journalists who actually talked to Osama bin Laden. We'll be down there with Lawton Smalls. We'll be down there. We're going to have one of the Milfingtons will be down there.
One of the Milfingtons?
Yeah, Brendan P.W. McDonald, Dan Pashman, son of Lewis and Linda Pashman, soon to be P.W.'d himself. his fiance is in, where is she, like Bosnia or somewhere? So Slovakia.
I think Czechoslovakia, right?
Is that, yeah, I think it's the Czech Republic. All right, Dan, are you listening to me? Well, get on the mic, you dummy. Come
what
on.
What do you need, buddy?
Hey, you're not a dummy. I'm sorry. That's wrong with me. You're a very smart man, both Brendan and Dan. Very smart gentlemen. Your fiance is now where?
Slovakia.
What is she doing there?
She's teaching English.
Okay, all right. So we got
Wayne talking in the back of there. My fiance is there teaching English in the town of Košice, Slovakia, and it's very exciting. She actually I'm going to go and visit her in 5 weeks from now.
Okay. Uh-oh. Well, that's cool. You'll let us know what happens. Maybe you'll call us from there. We got a phone call, another surprise phone call. Hello.
Oh, Lord.
Happy birthday to you.
Is this Reverend Jackson?
Happy birthday.
It's the Reverend Jesse Jackson.
It feels to be 21. Hey, man. Happy birthday, buddy.
Reverend, thanks so much for calling in. How you been?
Well, I've been down in Louisiana and Alabama, Mississippi, the last 2 weeks. It's been a very serious and painful journey, and yet it's been a fulfilling journey working with people who are in such real need and giving them some support. And so kind of what I'm really into right now. Mm-hmm. And I just always want to thank you for giving people the airwaves and some good information.
We're trying, Reverend. Thank you so much for calling. I really, really appreciate it.
Well, keep on talking. You know, the Bible says in the beginning was the Word, and the Word was with God. And so the Word precedes the world. Good words make good worlds. And so you certainly give us good words with lots of integrity. And so I really call you to say thank you.
All right. Well, we really appreciate you calling in this morning. Thanks, Reverend.
Thank you, Reverend Jackson.
Take care. You know, one time, I got
to
tell this.
That was, I'd say on a scale from 1 to 10, probably a 10 on the heaviest birthday greeting ever.
Ever, yeah. You know, one time, it really was. But, you know, one time, I called Reverend Jackson on the phone. I was talking to my son about something. We were having an argument about something. I said, wait a minute, here, talk to somebody.
Yeah.
And my son didn't know who it was.
Right.
And he gets on the phone, he says, Chris, this is Reverend Jesse Jackson. My son froze.
Really?
Yeah,
he's like, freaked out?
Yeah, he was like a teenager at the time. He's like,
what do I do now?
The next thing, that really was Reverend Jackson? I said, yeah, that was really
hilarious.
Reverend Jackson.
Yeah,
man.
Well, that was nice of him to call. And, you know, we're all going down to see. Hey, is Little Goliath coming to D.C. with us tomorrow? No, he's not?
No.
All right. You know, we've got
one of these days we want to get them out to, you know, to the broadcast.
Well, it's just like he's so on top of stuff. I think he might help out down there. Go on, put him on the mic. Hey, Dave, you know. You know, we kid you because we love you. You know that, right?
Yeah, I know that.
And
yeah.
I think you're doing a great job, and I just want to personally thank you for being on board here.
Hey, man, thanks. And I want to thank you for thanking me.
Now what?
Oh, this is gonna go somewhere.
What would you be doing if you weren't doing this?
What would I be doing?
Yeah,
robbing banks.
God.
Sticking up people for their iPods.
Take your time with this one. I know.
Yeah, I can't. I had an answer, but I didn't want to say it on air. You know?
I see.
I'd probably be at home in front of the computer.
At this hour? Way. Oh, really?
No,
really?
Actually, no. I'd be sleeping at this
there
hour.
There you go. But you are a painter, right?
Yeah, I am a painter.
And how's that going, the painting?
Well, I mean, I.
Take your time.
Okay, I'm kind of a slacker.
Okay.
So it's taken me a while to get set up. Like I've
so you got to get brushes and
yeah. I've got the brushes and I've got the paints and I finally got the canvas.
Uh-huh.
Now I need to get some frames and a stapler.
Isn't that sort of going way ahead?
No, I mean like the
the
frames
canvas
underneath
for the canvas.
The canvas that you stretch.
I was
going to
say you
on,
skipped
so.
A step there, which is the actual painting of the painting.
Yeah. How's the picture of the four dogs playing cards going?
It's going well, man.
I'm very good.
Good, you're ahead of the curve on that one.
So I've got a bunch of paintings that I want to show in the city.
Uh-huh.
But
show them
I'm not
here,
sure
right
where to
wall.
Go. I'm not sure, like, what to do with them.
I'm just so glad you didn't just say, I've got a bunch of paintings in my head that are ready to go. I'm glad you actually have some that you have.
No, I actually do have some paintings. And,
all right, well,
and I really want to get down to business and start doing it. But
Yeah, I feel like that's going to happen.
Thanks.
But, in the meantime,
I'm glad you believe. Believe in me, man.
Yeah.
I do. I could only assume that you must be good at something, and I think painting might be it. I'm looking forward to seeing the paintings. If you bring them in, we'll put them on the website.
You're invited, man.
See, a lot of people are going to think about
my opening, man.
Okay, we can do it at my house, dude.
All right. The Marin Gallery. You've got some groovy people there, right?
Yeah,
some
and the story
important people. You can invite them up to your apartment.
I have at least a writer from The Nation, a guy who plays guitar, and someone who appears on Conan occasionally.
Right. And a dentist.
That sounds good.
And a woman with a ferret. I say that's a pretty hip opening right there,
definitely.
Wouldn't you?
Definitely.
All right, so we were going to talk about, do we have time to talk? I don't know if we do.
What, you want to talk about Chang?
All right, yeah, well, I got it here. For those of you who are just tuning in, here are some highlights of what we talked about on the program. It's time for today's Morning Sedition Cliff Notes. President Bush has appointed terrorism expert Fran Townsend, who should be hunting Osama bin Laden, to lead the federal investigation into the response to Hurricane Katrina. Townsend will look at what went right, what went wrong, and how none of it is the president's fault. The president has supplied Townsend with a staff, a mandate, and, of course, her conclusions. Her conclusions, Dave. Nothing, Goliath. All right, forget it. A Dutch talk show. He's still sitting there going, "Did that guy just bust on me?" All right, a Dutch talk show host plans to take heroin on the air. This is actually the first of three reality shows. After Shoot Up and Swallow, will be Give Up and Detox, and then Relapse and Drop Dead.
Oh God!
Jeb Bush introduced the Florida state legislator to a sword that he calls his mystical warrior friend Chang. Critics say that kind of delusional babbling sounds less like Chang and more like Chong and Up in Smoke. This information will be especially enlightening if Chang ever needs to be kept alive through a feeding tube. Today's phrase just dropping into conversation. So Jeb Bush has a mystical warrior named Chang guiding him. Wake up, sheeple. That's Karl Rove in a bamboo helmet. Those are the Morning Edition Cliff Notes. Now, Dave, you know I'm just kidding you, right?
Absolutely. You know, any chance to get on air, man, whatever.
Oh, wow.
You know? No such thing as best.
Wow, look at that. He sees himself as a radio personality.
That's right.
If you, maybe you should be with Franken. You could just call double dead air. So, Riley, we're going to be in D.C.
D.C. tomorrow.
I love Al. I love him. Yeah. I love Al. We'll be in D.C. tomorrow with Cindy Sheehan and Peter Bergen, some special guests.
Looking much forward
Happy
to
birthday,
it.
Riley.
Thank you so much. Thank you all for the birthday wishes. We'll see you tomorrow right here on Air America Radio.